Good evening, everybody. It is February 28th, 2018, just a little after 7 o'clock. We are going to be bannering the Blue Shirts ahead of a Rangers game where they will take on the Vancouver Canucks in Vancouver. But the important thing to talk about now, we are post-trade deadline, and we have a lot of stuff to talk about. The Rangers were very active. They made a lot of moves, and we're going to get right into it. But first, I want to introduce Mike. How's it going, Mike?
Tammy? I'm doing great. How you doing, Tammy?
Good. And for the time being, we're also joined by Joe from Connecticut. How's it going, Joe from Connecticut?
First-time caller, long-time listener.
Well, we appreciate your support of the program.
Pretty crazy stuff, right?
We appreciate your support of the program, but I think we're going to get right into the heat of the matter. On trade deadline day, Ryan McDonagh, JT Miller, Tampa Bay bound. Coming back, Vladislav Nemestikov, Lieber Hayek, Brett Howden, 2018 first round pick, 2019 conditional second round pick that becomes a first rounder in the event that the Tampa Bay Lightning win the Stanley Cup in 2018 or 2019. So, Joe, I'm going to kick it off to you just because we don't know how long we're going to have you. What do you make of the McDonagh trade? It's something that we speculated about. We wrote about that. This could be something that would be Jeff Gorton's sort of big test for him early on in his tenure as general manager, and now that the axe has sort of been swung, well, what are your thoughts?
I love the terminology, the axe has been swung, because it really did feel like, in a lot of ways, an execution, didn't it, from really this golden age of Rangers hockey that, I guess, is a totally separate topic, but really only lasted for 2 years. I got to start a trade and the Miller trade on its own. Jeff Gorton had a lot of work to do this week, and he did a lot of work. And I think when you look at the amount of prospects and picks that he got back, he really did a wonderful job with what he was given. And we can get into the complications of why it was so hard to trade McDonagh in a bit, but the short version is Erik Karlsson also being on the market. I think a lot of people looked at the McDonagh availability, and myself included in this, because you can go back to two or three podcasts where I was literally begging for, Mitch Marner and William Nylander. But I think a lot of us looked at Ryan McDonagh and thought, okay, we need to get either a very young, resume aspect player in the NHL or top end prospects. And the Rangers did get top-end prospects from Tampa, but Tampa didn't have the deepest prospect pool. Sergachev and Point were really the two roster names that I think a lot of people wanted back from Tampa, and it just wasn't in the cards. Yzerman held to his guns, sure. A lot of people are saying Gorton got fleeced, but as I talked about in the article that I wrote breaking everything down about the McDonagh trade, I think it ran yesterday, it's not really fair to make an apples-to-apples comparison for the McDonagh situation, because Ryan McDonagh was on the market at the same time that Erik Karlsson was on the market, and Karlsson is a better defender. He's a generational player. McDonagh's in that second tier of players, but he's not on Carlson's level. And the same teams that were rumored to be interested in McDonagh, Karlsson. So for Gorton, all of that and find a suitor was unbelievably difficult. And he walks away with a first-round pick. I think it's a safe bet to say that the Rangers are probably going to get a second first-round pick out of this deal, because Tampa's just got to win the Cup this year or next year, and they're absolutely loaded. But you're getting rid of Miller, who the Rangers didn't want to deal with from a contract standpoint. You're moving on from McDonagh, again, for a player the Rangers didn't want to deal with from a contract standpoint. And both of those are smart decisions. You're getting back Vlad, who I think is a big upgrade over Miller, and we can kind of go into that later, too. And I really like the two prospects that the Rangers got back from Tampa Bay, despite, you know, all the different opinions on it. I really do like what the Rangers got back. Was it the best deal in the world? No. Do you want to be underwhelmed by the deal? Sure, and I think it's fair, but I also think that it's not fair to consider it not good value because it was good value. It was a good trade. It wasn't a great trade, and you want a great trade with a guy like McDonough, but given the factors, I think it was absolutely fine. And if you roll in the Nash, Grabner, and Holden deals as well, Ike Gordon had an A. He just had an A, maybe not an A plus, but an A draft day, or draft day, an A deadline week, really.
Before I weigh in, Mike, your thoughts initially on the McDonough and Miller trade, and anything else sort of related to the trade deadline?
Funny, Joe. Feels like at the very beginning of the season, I posed the hypothetical: if you can keep Miller or Hayes, you can only keep one. Who would you keep of the two?
I do remember.
And
that. I think we all kept Hayes, didn't we?
Yeah, we all kept Hayes, and it's something I brought up every now and then, like when Shayna or Tom would come on the show, and it was kind of this running thing, and it felt like, it wasn't a crystal ball thing, but it was obvious to everyone that the Miller contract was going to be really difficult. And I think a big part of that is, he and his agent might see him as a center, but centers get paid more. The Rangers don't see him that way. And from what we've seen, it's safe to assume that he's not really ready to be a center in a top six role. What my biggest takeaway from all this was, it was a really big package. Sure, the Rangers could have gotten more, but like Joe said, I think Carlson being involved really kind of threw a wrench into things. I don't feel like this trade came in at the 11th hour and the 59th minute. Like, the 3 p.m. deadline was over, but the trade was still being finalized, and they made some people anxious about, like, oh my God, what did they give up? Did they settle? I don't think they settled. From what we heard from Elliot Friedman and everything, is the Rangers are really high on Libor Hájek. And we also know that, I think Namestnikov is not, he's not a goal scoring guy, but he can do a lot of things. I know you said we could touch on that later, Joe, but in terms of a body to get back, I feel like Namestnikov is a really good fit for the Rangers in terms of what he can be. It's amazing what happens. You trade Derek Stepan and all the problems you have with center depth. So to get a guy who's on the younger side, Namestnikov's, kind of a young veteran now. He's been around the league a while. And of course he was a part of that Kucherov Stamkos line, and that really inflated his numbers, but he's a really solid player. He plays a 200-foot game. He can do a lot of good things. It is important to note that, the first round pick we got in 2018 is going to be, like the 30th or 31st pick of the draft. And, if the Rangers get the 2019 one as well, it's going to be the same story. But it's another first round pick. It's essentially, like you were saying, Joe, it's almost guaranteed to be two more first round picks. Because I don't know how this Tampa team doesn't win now. They're just scary, but that's a whole other bag of worms. Tom, what did you take away from this trade? Do you feel like the Rangers got enough?
So both of you brought up two things that are connected. Joe brought up the fact that it was the Erik Karlsson situation, and you brought up the fact that this was a deadline deal. And that's exactly how it sort of went down. I believe it was today's edition of 31 Thoughts by Elliot Friedman. He sort of wrote about how the Erik Karlsson situation was a complicated one because of their insistence in including Bobby Ryan's contract in any Erik Karlsson negotiation. That was sort of a non-starter for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So it was really a situation where the Rangers and Lightning were sort of in talks about this, sort of, working out what a potential thing could be. Then you have the Karlsson situation sort of fall off the table, and Gorton made a deal. And I think that's important because what we need to realize is that the Erik Karlsson's situation in Ottawa is not going away. That is clearly hit a point of no return, and I fully expect that come summer, maybe it's the draft, that he will get moved. And what that will do, very much like we saw with the market for wingers, that once Karlsson goes, that sort of limits the pool of assets that are available for someone like McDonough that you could have maybe pitted an offer against another team. And then also, once that high-end asset is off the market, teams will lowball a little bit. We saw Jeff Gorton go ahead of the things, and he trades Rick Nash to Boston. We see on deadline day that Evander Kane goes to the San Jose Sharks for a conditional first, and they called it a prospect, but I believe that the prospect in question was, I think, he 23, 24, 25. So
yeah, an underwhelming package for Evander Kane, yeah.
Right. So if you consider all these different elements, that's something that could have potentially happened with Ryan McDonough. And not to give too much of it away, because I have an article coming out for Banter tomorrow, the Rangers were in a situation where they had to trade Ryan McDonough. They put out this letter. They state what their intentions are. And one of the big selling points they had was the fact that they could have McDonough and trade him for a playoff run. And then the team acquiring him has him all of next year and then for potential playoffs. So it's a year plus one thing. If you trade him at the draft, it's not a rental in the way that we think of rentals at the trade deadline, but it's a 1 year thing. So that's one less thing that you can sort of say, hey, you know, you're really close this year. You add McDonough, you are really stacking the deck for yourself. And then plus you're going to have them all of next season. So I think when you can consider all the scenarios, you consider what his status was, you consider the Erik Karlsson situation, you consider what teams were offering, you consider that Tampa wasn't looking to move from its roster. I think you have to, in context, be happy with the return. The prospects will be what they will be. From all accounts, these are prospects that the Rangers have a familiarity with, the majority of it being Lieber Hayek, who played for, you know, with Hedel for the World Junior Tournament. And you have Brett Howden, who's 19, will be turning 20. So he's a potential guy that you can see in Hartford next year. And then you have the first round pick, and then a potential for another first. And even if it's not a first, it's a second. And those are draft choices that the Rangers desperately need as they enter this period where they're looking to stock up the cupboard. So when you consider everything that was at play, you got to give credit to Jeff Gorton for getting a good return, having the foresight of reading the market and, you know, moving an asset before it depreciated any further, in McDonough, who enters next year in the final year of his deal.
Yeah, there's another aspect to this too, not to cut you off, Tom, but before we kind of move off topic that we have not discussed, which is the McDonough-Miller deal was the very last deal made. And I think the way that we're looking at it as the easiest way to break down is Nemestikov for Miller straight up, and then McDonough for, you know, Howden, Hayek, and the two, you know, the two picks. When the Rangers traded Nash, they traded for Ryan Spooner. And Spooner, Miller, and Hayes were pretty much the exact same player. You know, they're all centers. They're all around the same age. They put up relatively similar numbers. If anything, Spooner's numbers are a little bit better. But is that because he's a better player, or is that because the support that he has in Boston is better? I don't know. But they needed to trade Miller. So I think a lot of people looked at the inclusion of Miller and expected so much more. But now that Miller has been moved, a report came out, I think, from Larry Brooks in the New York Post that the Rangers weren't thrilled with Miller's off-ice work ethic. The Rangers got rid of Miller, and what I'm assuming they think they sold high. And one of the reasons I think Vlad is such an upgrade, you know, Mike, I'm going to disagree with you in that I don't
necessarily
think Vlad is a sniper, but I do think he's a 25 to – he could be a 25 to 30-goal guy. He's got 20 goals right now. He'll probably finish at the 25-plus mark this year. But he hasn't really gotten that much of a chance in Tampa until recently. He's kind of been buried behind their better players. And Raw Charge, which is SB Nation's Tampa representative, did a story how this summer he was their number four, you know, top 25, under 25 players. And he is an elite level, like 89th percentile at zone exits, at controlling the puck, a guy who generates a ton of his own offense. And we really only saw him break out this year because he was being given an opportunity to. Now, that is not ideal to get that out of him when you are about to go into a rebuilding phase for the Rangers. But I don't think the Rangers see this as a, you know, 4 or 5 year rebuild. I think they're trying to do this in 3 years if possible. And
yeah.
Mestikov is only 4 years older or 4 months older than Miller is. So, you know, if you get him and you start gunning for the playoffs again when he's 27, you have more good years left there. And I think his contract is going to be better than Miller's will be too. But I think the reality is there are things going on the inside that we don't know about. And we talk about this a lot that, you know, when we complain about Vigneault, we complain about the usage. Like, I can tangibly see Tanner Glass is a better hockey player than Buchnevich. So there needs to be a really good reason for him to not be playing that we may not know about. And that caveat always exists. But in this case, I think the Rangers saw themselves as selling high on Miller. And even if that's not the case, they very smartly realized that they had Miller, Hayes, and Spooner, who were all kind of the same player. At least with Vlad, you're getting a guy who, again, I think brings a little bit more of a shot. And he is easily the best of the three in terms of his underlying numbers. So Spooner and Vlad are the kind of returns that you maybe don't necessarily expect for a rebuild. But they're young enough that they can at least kind of help show the kids how to get through things, you know, show them the ropes and just, you know, they're old enough to show the kids how to the ropes. But they're also young enough that if
they're young enough to get all their references. Yeah.
Right. They haven't aged out of their prime yet, or they're at the tail end of their prime. And I think that was important too. But I really do, you know, top to bottom, like the work Gordon did. But if we're going to talk about why Miller was included, because a lot of people are complaining that Miller should have never been thrown in, I think that's the reason why.
Well, he was arbitration eligible, much like Nemestikov is. And it's a situation where you look at his production last year, you look at where he was trending this year, and in a room where he has all the leverage, and I say that he has all the leverage because of when Miller entered the league, he is one contract year away from unrestricted free agency. So there was, if they ended up going to arbitration, any contract award would have been 1 year, which would have been in his best interest. So there's that potential risk that the Rangers avoid. I think one of the interesting things that Nemestikov can bring, and I'm personally interested to see what the line combinations are for tonight. I know that most of this year, the KZB line has been pretty amazing, but I think now that they sort of blown everything up, I personally would go back to sort of the concept of you have combos of players and then someone that sort of complements them. So, you know, if I were Alain Vigneault, I would be interested to see what does Nemestikov and Buchnevich look like? What does Zibanejad and Zuccarello look like? You have a guy in Zuccarello, who's an amazing playmaker. Zibanejad is known for his shot. I think that's sort of a good combination. And then I think that Nemestikov and Buchnevich could sort of play off each other very nicely, just sort of how Nemestikov and Kucherov played off each other. And this is not just to, you know, compare, you know, a bona fide superstar in Kucherov to Buchnevich, you know, on face value, but just if you sort of look at how Kucherov developed as a player statistically, there are a lot of similarities to Buchnevich. So that's sort of an interesting situation that can develop. I think we've done sort of a good, you know, looking over the major deal that they made on Monday. But I think the next thing that we should sort of talk about a little more in depth, and you sort of brought it up by bringing up Ryan Spooner, is the Rick Nash trade. The Rick Nash trade that Saturday night, it was reported all over the place that the Rangers and Bruins were sort of getting something together. And then finally Sunday morning, it's announced. And Rick Nash goes to Boston, and he returns Ryan Spooner, Matt Bolesky, who is currently in the minors at 50% salary retained, Ryan Lindgren, a all-important 2018 first-round pick, and a 2019 seven-round pick. So I'll pose the question again to Joe. I think this is another interesting situation because tell me if I'm wrong. The initial reaction to the return on Sunday was one way, but once the deadline was passed, there was sort of a different reaction. What would you say? Would you say that's accurate? That initially, player or rather fans were a little underwhelmed with the return, but once they saw everything in context, they appreciated it a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, it was a classic case of I wanted to be first in terms of the insiders reporting. So, you know, news came out that Nash was traded for a first-round pick in Ryan Lindgren. And, you know, again, let me put my hand in the air. I retweeted it and was upset with the return. And again, I want to use the terminology upset correctly. It was not, you know, stomp my feet and throw my poop against the wall, because ultimately a guy like Rick Nash is a rental. You have to trade him, and you have to trade him for whatever you can get. So I was underwhelmed with the return when I heard everything, especially because I knew the Rangers retained 50% of Nash's salary. When I saw the whole thing, it was just this, wow, that's an unbelievable trade by Jeff Gordon. Because Spooner is a guy that has a ton of value. Even if the Rangers don't use him, they can flip him at the draft, and I think they can get a relatively decent return. If they don't want to do that, they can still use him. Bolesky, at 50% salary retained, if the Rangers drop him in the minors, it's a $900,000 cap hit, a little bit less, actually, for the next 2 years. That's nothing. If they want to play him, he could probably be a solid fourth-line option. He's expensive at $1.9 million, but not for a rebuilding team. And the first-round pick, I don't know if Gordon did this intentionally. He definitely hedged his bet with Tampa, making sure that Tampa got both Miller and McDonough. They're the clear-cut favorites. That's why that conditional first-round pick is so important in terms of that 19-second becoming a first. But Boston and Tampa are going to play each other at some point if they both do very well. And you're getting a better draft pick out of one of the teams based off of just the fact that both of them can't go all the way to the Stanley Cup or maybe as deep as even the Eastern Conference Final, because they have to play one another. So, you know, you hope that Boston runs into a buzzsaw and they get upset in the first round, but at the very least, you're going to have that second first-round pick fall around 25. And Mike brought up a good point. Not all first-round picks are created equal, so there's definitely, you know, it's not like a top-10 pick, but this is a draft that is absolutely loaded with superstar potential the first 8 picks or so. The Rangers should assuredly have their first-round draft pick fall in that range. From there, a lot of people consider this an average-to-weak draft, but I think it's because there's not that many centers, and centers take such a high priority. So there are wingers and defensemen who are boom or bust or a ton of skill, and I think the Rangers need to make plays on all of those guys. If they're not trying to get some picks in the 2019 draft, which I don't think would be the worst thing in the world, I think you're going to find a lot of value in the Boston first-round pick, because I do think Tampa is going to be going to the Stanley Cup. But if that happens, they have to take Boston out, probably in the second round, and that makes the Boston pick better. So, again, I don't know if it was intentional from Gordon, but it does work out in the Rangers' favor.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting, but Mike, what are your thoughts?
I don't know. I like to look at how the opposing fan base and writers and bloggers feel about a trade, to kind of put things in context. And everything I've seen from Bruins writers and bloggers is that, you know, Boston, this is not a trade they should have been involved in, and that they likely paid too much. And it's interesting because when I look at this trade at face value, I was underwhelmed just like Joe at first, and then, you know, I processed it a little bit more. I think what made me less encouraged about it, Tom, was specifically Ryan Lindgren and his relatively kind of modest ceiling for, you know, a defenseman. He's like a really, really physical D. You know, his highlight reel that Adam put up on the site is, you know, just hip checks and, you know, blowing guys up and all that good stuff, which is interesting because he's really not that big. But it's just, okay, well, you know, is that a third pair defenseman who, you know, plays with a little bit of an edge, and it's yet another guy on the left side, which seems to be something the Rangers have a lot right now, is defensive prospects on the left side. And we all know how important it is to have a defender who can play the right side, particularly in the top six, top four role. Spooner is, I think a lot of what this trade success rides on is what happens to Spooner. I'm writing something right now for Banter about him. He's a guy who, you know, he's 26 now, but he's only been 26 for about a month. And he, 2 years ago, Tom, when I was researching my article, he had 19 primary assists at 5-on-5 hockey. And he did that, you know, with Jimmy Hayes and Bolesky. So it's not like, you know, he was just setting up someone who just had a cannon, you know what I mean? And it was just automatic goals. So Spooner's ability to move the puck is really exceptional. He's a guy who can be an impact on the power play. He's terrible at faceoffs, but there's a lot more to being a center than winning draws. He's small. He's only 5'10". He plays on the perimeter. He doesn't really respond well and adapt well to being pushed around the ice in physical play. And I'm sure for a lot of Rangers fans, that might cause them to roll their eyes with so many pass-first players over the years recently, especially centers. But like Joe said, if they can flip Spooner, I'm sure they can get something really worthwhile. You know, maybe even using him to move up in the draft comes to mind. I don't know what we should really expect out of Bolesky. I also feel like he can be, you know, a guy who can play, you know, in a bottom six role in the NHL and still be useful. He's a shoot first guy. He's a winger. He's now 29 years old. So, you know, I don't think there's any kind of unturned aspect of his game where he's going to surprise anyone. But, you know, in terms of a guy who can show up and play hard physical hockey, just get pucks to the net, he's not that bad of an option. Like I said, Spooner's really interesting. And the Rangers knew they wanted to sell Nash. This was probably the best package they had, or at least they felt like this was an acceptable deal. I would have loved for the other asset to be anything other than a seventh round pick. You know, I think I'd even feel significantly better if it was a fourth or fifth round draft choice, because, you know, a seventh round pick is it's often stapled onto trades as like an insurance thing, like, you know, and just in case everything goes wrong, you don't walk away empty handed. And, you know,
I don't mean to interrupt you, Mike, but I do just want to add one point on that I'm glad you brought up, because I forgot about
God
it.
God damn it. You son of a bitch.
Yes. It's like the Bruins website, Stanley Cup of Chowder, when they did their review, I think their terminology of it was, quote, a worthless piece of currency. And, you know, it certainly can be, and more often than not will be. Lundqvist was a seventh-round pick, though. And, you know, not that that's the shining example, because how often are you going to find a generational player that deep in the draft? But the real example is a guy like Ty Ronning, who the Rangers took with like the second to last pick in the draft, who currently has 50 goals in the WHL and, you know, could turn into a nice player for the Rangers. So yes, it's useless. But I'd rather have it than not have it, because once you get beyond really the second and third rounds of the draft, it's a lottery ticket. So the more tickets you have, the better. And I'm not disagreeing with what you said in that more than likely, whoever the Rangers take with that pick will not ever play a game for the Rangers, but you just don't know. And in a rebuilding year like this, I mean, people fall all the time. Think of how many players are drafted as overages because they were missed out on the year before for whatever reason, the Russia factor, their size in Ronning's case, whatever it would be. You can take those guys in the seventh round, and the Rangers do seem to be getting a little bit more risky with their back-end picks. So, yes, I totally agree with you. It's not like it would it have been much better if it was a fourth-round pick. It would have been a million times better if it was a fourth-round pick. But to the people who think it's nothing, it's not nothing. It's another lottery.
No, it's
sure,
not nothing.
It's not
yeah.
nothing. And not you weren't
it's,
saying
it's
that.
It's an
there
asset.
Plenty of people
yeah.
who reached out to me who said, what's the point of even asking for it? You want as much as you can get. I'll take 20 seventh-round picks over none. You know what I mean? I'd probably take 20 second-round picks over 5 sixth-round picks. Because that's like once you're that deep in the draft, it's a lottery ticket. You know, the more shots you have at it, the better you are to match the cherries and win whatever it is you need to win. But, yeah, that's a very long-winded way of saying to anybody who reached out to me furious that the Rangers got a seventh-round pick, that it wasn't like a fifth or a fourth or some people said a second first. Yeah, that's not – it's important.
So one important thing, you know, since we're talking about seventh-round picks, this is something actually that the Rangers did last year where they drafted for NHL need, and by NHL need I mean someone that's older and can step into the league sooner rather than later. One of those players was Patrick Verda, who is playing for TPS in the Liga. And this year he has 13 goals, 23 assists, 36 points, in 54 games. He only had 26 points all of last season. So that's an example of using a seventh round pick strategically, getting someone that maybe is fodder for Hartford to foster competition, or someone that maybe is potentially a fourth liner at the NHL level. And that's something that you may sort of, you know, sneeze at, but for a seventh round draft choice, if you can get someone that potentially fits at the NHL level for whatever it costs them for their first contract. In this situation, it's not an entry level deal because he'll be 21, 22 probably by the time he signs. So I think that there's nothing sort of wrong with that that concept. So I think at this point we've sort of went through the Boston trade. My thoughts are very similar to yours, that they get Spooner, who's an interesting piece that could potentially get flipped. Bileski is a classic, even though he's not in charge anymore.
I just wanted to add Spooner. I think the potential for him to be flipped, I think, is really high, and that, you know, the Rangers can get something out of him, but I wouldn't write him off as that being his only value. He is, you know, a guy, you know, he's only two seasons removed from being, you know, a 50-point player in the NHL. And, you know, like I said, it's even if, you know, they have Anderson, they have Hedl, and so you want to have a hole there for them to step into on that third line and that center role. But Spooner's adept at playing wing too. I mean, he's a guy that if you can sign him for, you know, he might be most valuable to the team on something like a 2-year deal where he'll be, you know, dramatically less expensive than a guy like JT Miller. And meanwhile, like his underlying numbers are, you know, he had a great season. You know, he just missed a couple games with injuries. I think he had a concussion. But, you know, he was on pace for, you know, if he hadn't had any injuries, he's on pace for a 50-point season right now. He's not, you know, there's enough there, I think, where he's, and this is what I'm writing about in my article, but there's enough there that makes him a player that we should all really be keeping a close eye on here as the regular season wraps up, because these games might feel like worthless and pointless now that the deadline's done and the Rangers are sold and they're not doing the playoffs. You know, we all know that, but this is a huge, you know, 20 games or so for a lot of guys, including
tryouts for
Kevin
next year.
Hayes. Yeah. And Spooner. Exactly. It's you have to earn, these are guys trying to earn contracts, trying to earn roster spots, and new guys, new blood, trying to prove they can make a difference. I mean, O'Gara has been frankly terrible. But, you know, even he has this opportunity to be like, you know, I can be a part of a solution here. And that's really valuable. And it's important to pay attention to this stuff because, you know, when we think rebuild, we think prospects, you know, guys who are 20, 20, 21, 19-year-old guys like, you know, Hayek and Howden. But there's a lot more to it. And Rykov we haven't even gotten to. But, you know, there's more to it than that. You need these guys who, like Joe was saying before, can be there for the transition. You need guys like Spooner who are versatile, who can do a lot of different things for the team and be on the power play, play on, like, a sheltered third scoring line. And, you know, he 2 years from now, he's going to be, you know, turning 28. So, 28 into 29. So, you know, it's not like he's going to be out of the window for what this team is trying to do. If, like, I agree with Joe, by the way, that I feel the 3-year rebuild is kind of what the Rangers want to do. They want to be competitive sooner rather than later because, frankly, it's New York.
Tom, you're a master, by the way. Just so that everybody knows, I'm dealing with something at home, so that's why Tom is running the show tonight. I have hung up and joined the show twice, and Tom has handled it seamlessly, so wonderful work.
Well, it
Tom.
Was seamless until you brought attention to it, Joseph.
Sure, but he needs to be rewarded for his good behavior, unlike you bastard. Anyway, one point that I did want to make, and Mike brought it up, and I've touched on it a few times, I do think there is a tendency to look at players like Spooner, who's 26, and say, oh, he's going to be 29 when the Rangers are competitive again. What's the point of even having him? But, like, Zuccarello is very useful, right? And he's going to be 31. It's not an age thing. It's making sure that players are played in a role that they're capable of and paid appropriately. Nobody would have said anything about Dan Girardi if he was a third-pairing defenseman making $2.5 million a year. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter that he's 32 years old. It matters the way he's playing. So if Vlad is a good player, if he's a 25-goal, 50-point player at 31, he's still a useful player at 31. There's no reason to assume that the next time the Rangers make a run at the playoffs, these guys can't be on the team. You know,
I don't know
Zuccarello,
where you're getting 25 goals for, by the way, with Nemestikov. Last year he had 10 goals, Joe. 10!
Yeah. How many does he have right now, Michael?
With playing with Kucherov and Stamkos? I don't know, Joe. You tell me.
Well, I can answer that question factually with 20. Was he playing with Stamkos? I didn't think he was with Stamkos. I thought he was with Stamkos.
So it's been
part of the season, he was with Kucherov and Stamkos.
Well, he's not with him now, Michael.
Well, so, if he still played a significant number of games with St. Joseph.
And before I allow Tom to make a coherent point, Rick Nash. I mean, Nash is how old? 34? Right?
Yeah, so,
I mean,
yeah, 34.
One of the Rangers' more valuable players at 34 years old. So it is not about age. If these guys are going to be around.
No, I'm
and they're
just saying the goal
and
thing
being,
is a little silly goose. That's
and
all.
They're being paid well, then it is what it is. Zuccarello's, you know what I mean? Zuccarello's useful now. If you can lock down Zuccarello for another 2 years or 3 years at the right price, you do it. It's just the Rangers made so many bad decisions with aging players. That's all. And
yeah,
let
correct. You and I don't. Yeah, I still, to be clear, I still think Nemestikov can be something like a 50-point guy. I just don't think he's the goal guy. I mean, in the last 2 months of hockey, he has 5 goals. And the thing is, like, people might hear that and they might be like, oh, you know, five goals in his last 24 games. But, you know, what's important here is that he's a guy who will make an impact when he's not in the, like, when he's not in the box score. This isn't like a guy like Jimmy Vesey who, if he doesn't score a goal, you don't even notice he's in the lineup. He plays all three zones well. And the point you brought up, Joe, is in terms of like a puck carrying guy who can play wing and center, Namestnikov is really, really exceptional. He's excellent at carrying the puck. And that is something that I feel like you should pay more for that than a guy who just happened to, you know, have hot shooting one year. So I'm really enthused and encouraged about what Namestnikov can be to this team. And I wanted to make that clear. I just don't think he's a 25 goal guy. That's all.
We'll see next year. And before we transition to the next trade, I just wanted to clarify one thing, Mike. When I was sort of talking about Ryan Spooner, what I was trying to say is that he's an interesting player in the fact that we will see what he's capable of with the Rangers the rest of the way, and they have the option to flip him if they so choose. And now, depending on what the climate is around the draft, in terms, by that I mean what players are available for trade, he's an interesting option. As you said, he's not too far removed from being a 50-point player, and he's older, but he still has age on his side, so it gives the Rangers flexibility. It wasn't a situation where I'm just looking at Spooner as a guy that's here, he increases his value, and the Rangers flip him. I think that he could be something for this team, but they also do have that sort of flexibility with him. With that said, the last trade sort of to talk about, because when we were on the podcast last time, Nick Holden had already been traded. So the Rangers send Michael Grabner across the Hudson to the New Jersey Devils for Yegov Rykov and a 2018 second round pick. The interesting thing, he's a teammate of Igor Shishorkin, and I believe his contract is the same length as Shishorkin. So theoretically, both could come to North America at the same time. So I will pose the question to Joe. I think
why is
that
it
this
Joe that goes first.
I'm posing
better,
it to
Michael.
Well, if we're being honest, I'm posing it to Joe first because we don't know if he's going to drop in or drop out, and then I will always have you on the line, Mike, that we can sort of banter back and forth. So,
you don't know if I'm going to leave.
Well, you'd make very sad if you left, and I don't think you want to do that.
Make me very sad by going to Joe first, but let's continue.
Well,
I understand
where I
rest. No, I'm chicken
feet.
You know
I
get it.
This is why Tom is going to get tacos, you son of a bitch.
So I would say the Michael Grabner trade, out of all of them, there was sort of a similar consensus that the Rangers did pretty well. I would say that they got a better return for Grabner than the Sabres did for Evander Kane. For by all accounts, Rykov is a pretty good defensive prospect. I know that there's been a bunch of people raving about him, and also getting that second round pick is also very helpful. Given the way that the Devils have been, you don't know next year if they sort of bottom out, that could be sort of like a really late first. Just I'm saying the fact that the Devils could potentially bottom out, because if you look at some of their underlying metrics, it doesn't always tell the best story, and you could say that Taylor Hall
spot in the playoffs is not at all assured. I mean, they're on the tail end.
And Taylor Hall is really carrying things. So
yeah.
With that said, Joe, your reaction to the Grabner trade.
Let's hear what Joe has to say.
So just to annoy Mike further, because we got into a fight about this a couple of weeks ago, I do think the Ilya Kovalchuk thing, who is also a teammate of Rykov, is I think it's going to be a factor here as well. The reality of the situation, and I didn't get into this with Hayek, but I kind of wanted to. We were talking about it a little bit before the show. the Rangers have broadened their horizons in terms of European prospects and their European scouting efforts. And part of the reason why I think the Rangers were so intrigued with Hájek was because they've had an eye on the Czech League for the past couple of years. He hasn't been in the Czech League for the past 2 years, but he has played with their international junior teams. The Rangers obviously had a very close eye on him in the World Juniors because he was a teammate of Filip Hedl, and Hájek was the best defenseman on the Czech team that made a very surprising run through the tournament. He was like a Ryan McDonagh on steroids, from honestly like Victor Hedman-like in the World Juniors. The reason I'm saying that is, A, it's good value to know about why the Rangers wanted Hájek so much, but also the Rangers have been keeping an eye on Shestjorkin for a year. I mean, plus, they've been keeping an eye on him for a long time. And Rykov is a teammate of his. So the Rangers have gotten a good look at him. And he's playing on SKA. Adam referred to it as the best not NHL team on the planet, which I think is absolutely true. He's only getting 13 or 14 minutes a night. He's not seeing any power play time. And he still has 16 points in 50 games. I mean, for a 20-year-old, to play that type of a role, an everyday role on SKA, is relatively unheard of. When they traded for Pavel Buchnevich his last year in Russia, Buchnevich cycled in and out of the lineup because everybody takes their turn sitting at SKA because that's how much talent they have. So for him to be playing every night is really impressive. I think if you look at the way that some deals went down, you know, the market collapsing on Evander Kane and really on Carlson in a way as well, I would have taken either the second or Rykov. And the Rangers got Rykov. It's Rykov, isn't it? I keep saying Rykov. I'm sorry. It's Rykov. Tom told me that before, and I forgot because I'm a terrible person. So to get both of them, I think it's fantastic. And again, there's this, I don't know who that prospect is bias. So, oh, we're making a trade with the Devils. You take the best pick you can get. I could give a shit. You didn't trade Nash to the Devils. You didn't trade McDonagh to the Devils, where Grabner is going to be there the rest of this year. If the Devils win in the first round, I would be shocked. And then that's the end of it. He's gone. So you get the value that you can out of him. Grabner is leaving anyway, but a lot of people look at this pick and they're like, oh, I don't know who that guy is. Trust me, a 20-year-old playing at SKA every day, especially on defense, and he is a very good defenseman, with the wider rink, may I add. So it'll be easier to defend in North America. You can't ask for more. I mean, again, we're not talking about a number one defenseman here, but you are talking about a top four guy. I mean, I was talking to Alex Nunn about him. I really do get Russian Strawman vibes out of him, and not necessarily a talent comparison or a ceiling comparison, although maybe a ceiling comparison, but Strawman wasn't the guy in New York, but he was the guy next to the guy. And he was the guy next to McDonagh who was making everything happen. And Rykov kind of seems like he could be that type of a player. So I think Jeff Gordon did really well there as well. Thoughts on the trade?
Oh, is it my turn? It's funny, Joe, because you and I talked a lot about how Grabner just felt like he's good enough to get a first back. You know what I mean? And I think that was the message. And so I understand that some people might be like, well, who's this guy in a second? But to me, getting Rykov and the second for the Devils is better than just getting the first. In the game of, you know, you want as many swings as you can at something like landing a prospect or a young player, you get a guy that you know. Because like you said, Joe, the Rangers organization, the scouts in Russia obviously have a very good idea of who Rykov is. I think the scout in Russia might be Steve Eminger, former Rangers defenseman, actually. But Rangers legend. What number did Steve Eminger wear, Tom?
Oh,
I know,
man,
the answer.
That's an interesting question. I'm trying to
it's
think off the top of my head.
It is 44.
Really?
Joe was rude. I'm sure you would have gotten it.
Take that and shove it in your face with your goddamn pop quizzes.
That was first of all, that question was asked to Tom. Second of all, you're incredibly rude. and I love you very much. Where was I?
I
like that it's two assets. I'd rather they get Rykov and the second than just the first for the reasons I said before. I think there's a lot of value in just this guy is, like Joe was saying, he's playing against men, you know, and that's one of the reasons why Hedl and Anderson are so exciting. And, you know, you get to see them like, oh, you know, they're still looking exceptional playing, you know, against men and, you know, with men. But the Rykov thing that stands out to me is it's really hard for a 20-year-old defenseman to play in the KHL and to stand out as like, oh, he's good at what he does. And that's what Rykov's been able to do. You know, I've talked to a couple of people who cover the Devils and write about the Devils, and a lot of them were kind of ho-hum about Rykov, but I think a lot of that was tied to the fact that there was no certainty that he would ever come over to the NHL. And the most recent word we got out of Rykov and his camp is that they're excited about this trade. I think New York has just, frankly, a lot more draw than playing in Newark. And that's a big deal. There's also, there's Buchnevich here, there's the Shestorkin connection. You know, there's enough there to make a guy like him want to give this a try, even after what happened with Barry Glazov. So I'm really kind of curious about what his ceiling is. But like Joe said, being the guy next to the guy, being just a top four guy or even a second pair guy, those are the sort of guys you need to develop on your own, because you can overpay for those guys so easily. It's so easy to pay too much when you just have a hole in your lineup. You need a second pair defender, and you'll throw whatever money you have at them in free agency. But if you can develop that guy on your own, and you know this is a prospect that's a couple of years further along than he would be if he was drafted this year, they know what they're getting into. He has good size. I think in the last 2 years or something, he's added 20 pounds of muscle. He's not a brilliant skater, but he does have enough of these little things where he's just a toolbox defenseman, I call them. Guys who can do a little bit of everything, a little bit like McDonough, but obviously he's not going to be a skater like McDonough. So I'm kind of optimistic about this one. I feel like this trade, the Rangers did really well. They got this one out of the way early. And in many ways, it's interesting. This trade almost kind of derailed what happened a lot with the winger market, because the Rangers got such a good return that I think it scared a lot of teams off of, oh, this is what a rental costs. And, you know, because the word around the league and among scouts and analysts is that, yeah, Rykov is really good. And getting Rykov and a second, you know, it was a pretty great return.
Yeah, and the only other thing, and I apologize to cut you off, Tom, that I think you need to remember when you're evaluating a player like Rykov, players who play in professional leagues as teenagers do not put up the same numbers that you would expect from a kid in juniors. And here's my example. Brett Howden, for example, who projects to be, you know, at the highest end, a low-end first-line center at his, you know, I think everybody agrees he's going to be a really great third-line center. He has 59 points in 39 games in the WHL. So he has 20 more points than games played.
Yeah, video game numbers.
You look at his 14 point or his 16 points in 50 games, and you think to yourself, "Oh, well, like, what the hell is that?" He's playing against men. Hedl had like 8 points in 33 Czech League games, and I was gushing over just how much offense that is produced for a 17-year-old. And I don't think people really understood that's what it is. If you have a guy who's 19 and he's putting up 60 points in 30 games in, like, Sweden, that's a generational player. You just do not get offense like that out of someone that young. I mean, Dahlin, who I think everybody expects to be the number one overall pick and, you know, the next greatest thing, I mean, he has 17 points in 30 games or something like that in Sweden, and that is, like, unheard of offense for a defenseman. So just keep that in mind. You know, we have Alex Nunn. We actually brought on Tobias on the website to help with some of our prospect work. And Adam, like, these people watch film. They go through everything. They formulate an opinion. The rest of us go to Elite Prospects and, you know,
we go to all the comparison tools and we try to figure it out. But
and we ask them what
prospect.
We should think. Yeah.
Right. Don't go to elite prospects and say, oh, he only has 14 points in 50 games. He's nothing. That's not at all the way that this works. All right,
so
Tom,
you could,
I'm done interrupting.
So you could say that they watch the games.
They watch
I hate you so much.
Game.
I just want you to know that I hate you. Just you've betrayed me. I was on your side because of Mike's rudeness, and now I'm on Mike's side.
Well, no, my point is that for all the flack that they get for their chart work and
not
their analytics.
You know what? I thought you were making a pun, but I see that it was a pun that was also steeped in logic. I'm back on your side. I like it. Yes.
Well, thank you. So I would say to wrap a bow on everything that happened, the Rangers are at a point where they're going to play out the rest of the season. I, for one, am interested to see how many games Henrik Lundqvist will play. I think that not only is it equally valuable for guys like Spooner, guys like Nemestikov, to see how they fit, in addition to the Hartford guys that they eventually bring up, although how many are brought up remains to be seen because Hartford is sort of chasing a playoff spot. I don't remember the last time I looked, but they were around 6 points out. But it was a situation where I want to see, you know, Alexander Georgiev play as many games as possible, because I think one of the most interesting positions next year is going to be goaltending, and it's going to be whoever the second goaltender is. And I put it in that way and say the second goaltender and not the backup goaltender, because I think that given the state of affairs, next year could be a very interesting year. It could be the closest that we've ever seen in the Henrik Lundqvist era, not counting when he was hurt and Cam Talbot came in and played, you know, all those games in a row, as close as possible to sort of a split of games down the middle. Now, I'm not saying that Lundqvist is only going to play 41 games next year, but I think you will see a reduction in his workload. It is in their best interest for him to play, you know, fewer games, because as we've seen, he can take sort of a, you know, ragtag, you know, bunch of misfits and drag them to places that they shouldn't be going. And that doesn't fit in the goal of being a rebuilding team. But I think that you can have him play. You're going to win some games, because even the worst of teams will finish with a somewhat, for lack of a better term, respectable point total. But he's committed to this process. He is understanding of what he signed up for. At any moment, he could sort of change his mind and say, this is something that I don't want, but I don't foresee that. He's been very adamant, whether it's been with John Giannone, where he had that sort of tweet thread before the deadline, where it's like, oh, sources say, and he was sort of making a joke that he was speaking directly to Henrik Lundqvist, that he doesn't see himself going anywhere. He doesn't see himself playing for anyone else. And I think that if they can sort of follow the Toronto Maple Leafs template of a rebuild, where they sort of bottom out, then the next year is also sort of a little bit bad. Then they have a year or two where they sort of take some baby steps. Then they have year three where they sort of make a run of it. And at this point, they've sort of, they've been able to develop some of the players that they've drafted. They've been able to develop some of the players that they've acquired in trades. And then you go into that fourth year and we'll see what this team is. The one thing that could potentially complicate things, and something that is too early to sort of consider, is how the impending expiration of the collective bargaining agreement plays into all of this? How does expansion play a role into this? But I think that if you're a Ranger fan, you should feel some sense of confidence. You should feel some sense of we're actually doing this. And it's going to be a little bit frustrating. It's going to be different. It's going to be a process, but it's not going to be a process of futility. It's not going to be a situation where we see mistake after mistake being made, not being learned from, Groundhog's Day all over again. There is a plan. They have committed to it. They wrote that letter. They won two games after it. We all joked, are they really going to follow through with this? But Gordon left no ambiguity. He took the axe to the majority of this roster, and it remains to be seen who else is going to go. It's a topic for another podcast, because I have to run in a few minutes, and then I'm gonna have Mike read off the Patreon names. But I still think that there's players on this roster now that come draft time, they're being shipped out, whether it's for prospects or a first round pick. But I think this is going to be interesting. It's going to take some time. It's going to fans are going to have to sort of refocus how they're watching the games. It's not going to be where we freak out over every misplay. We freak out over every bad goal or whatnot. It's not to sort of, it's
growing
the 76ers. Trust the process in growing pains and knowing that there is a purpose, there is a plan, there is a reason, and I'm excited to see it. I'm very excited to see this team build something, not buy it. And it should be a very interesting ride if done right, that will, culminate in something that is decades in the making. At this point, I would like to kick it off to Mike, if you would so kindly read the names of all the wonderful people that help make this podcast possible. They share, they like, in the Patreon, which is very, very, thankful. We understand that there are so many things out there that you could be using your discretionary income for. And we really do appreciate all of the support that you give. It truly does mean a lot.
Yes, thank you all. I actually, the timing.
God damn it.
Thank you both. Thank you, everyone. And especially thanks to the two of you for being understanding with my current situation. So thank you, guys.
No worries, Joe. Goodbye.
Go listen to us or subscribe to us and rate us on iTunes, too. All right? Do that. Then give us your money on Patreon and all that fun stuff. I love you all. Goodbye.
All right. Bye to Joe from Connecticut. And it's all yours, Mikey.
Tom, he's our leader. That's the way our leader acts. I just wanted to say, as much as Tom appreciates you guys and Joe appreciates everyone, I appreciate you all just a little bit more. John J. Porter, Anthony Viola, John Reppy, Johnny Olo, Alex Gardner, Alexander Ricard, Robert Courtney, Meaty Ogre, Daniel DeGen, Eric Cohn, Matt Bader, George Lippman, Dan Lynch, Danny Santiago, Gabriel Vargas, James Dangles, David L. Singer. It sounds like the name of a director to me. David L. Singer. Darwin Bushman, Grumpy Smokey, Scott Potash, Mike Offit, Chris B., Bob Kawa, Andrew Grigo, Stink Fleeman, Toy from Manhattan, Arch Williams, Igor Zalowski, Zachary Zetland. A couple of Z names there. I like that. Dan Crozy, Alexander Thornton, Thomas Osa, Trevor Kempner, and Michael Silvers. Thank you all very, very much. Your support means a lot. It makes the show possible. And Tom, I wanted to say this really quickly. I know you have to run. From a selfish perspective, I'm actually excited to cover the team going through this different stage, because I think you hit the nail on the head that they have to build this, not buy it. And there's nothing that's more exciting, I think, for fans than to kind of get attached to new young players. And it's been a while since there was like a full crop. It's kind of been fits and spurts of, it's Brady Shea and, Bucinovic. And, it's going to be – the team is going to very soon be defined by its youth and, a new young core. And Is that going to be tough for a lot of people? Yeah, it is. It's going to be hard, but I think the payoff, if it's done right, and that's the big thing here, is this organization has to pull this off the right way, and that means the front office has to make more tough decisions come draft day. They have to figure out what the hell they're going to do with Vigneault, but that's a whole other can of worms. And yeah, I'm excited for what comes next, just because the potential is limitless. And more importantly to me is there's just nothing but, you know, interesting stories to talk about. It's not the same. Are they ever going to win a cup in the Lundqvist window? That window's closed now, and that absolutely sucks. But what doesn't suck is that I feel like overall they did this deadline as well as they could have. I think Gorton did a very admirable job in terms of just getting back enough, you know, enough seeds to grow something. And like you said, it might be a couple of years where they suck, but really it's not, that's good news in the long term and just kind of crappy news in the short term, because the more they struggle and if they're mediocre next season or downright bad, that just means more, you know, higher picks, more opportunity for young guys, and we'll see what happens. But thank you, Tom, for hosting and doing all the Tom things.
It's my pleasure, Mike, and I would say I'm definitely excited. And if anything, we've seen all these other teams that have these really talented young prospects. It will be nice for the Rangers to have that as well. Mike, where can people find you besides Boucher Banter?
People can find my work specifically covering women's hockey at the Ice Garden and Sporting News, where I'm a contributor. Tom, where can people find you on the Twitter?
People can find me by my name at Tom, URTZJR, at Tom Rich Jr. And where can they find you on Twitter, Mikey?
At DigDeep BSB, which stands for Botswana Sauerkraut and borscht.
Bologna. Oh, okay. Well, thank you, everyone.
I grew up really liking bologna, Tom. I don't like bologna anymore. I don't like it.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining. We understand, you know, things have been.
You're
sort
not
going to
end the show, Tom.
Headache and chaotic, but we do appreciate your support and you
Tom,
know, share
what's your
this
favorite deli meat. Number one deli meat, Tom. You have to give me that at least.
That's an interesting one. I'll go with bologna.
God damn it. You went with bologna. You went with bologna just in spite. Out of spite, you went for bologna.
I did. Well,
I knew it.
Thank you, everyone, for
thank
joining
for
us. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Spite bologna is the worst. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Ice cold.
All righty, everyone. Take care. We'll speak with you again soon.
Bye-bye.